Okay, so we are live on LinkedIn. Good afternoon, good morning, depending on your time zone. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our inaugural session of the monthly investment funding AMA, which stands for Ask Me Anything series, which we are doing under the banner of the Dialogue with African Biotech Leaders in partnership with BioAfrica. I'm very thrilled to have you all join us today for what promises to be an enlightening and empowering discussion. Today, we are diving into the heart of the investment landscape, exploring the pathways to funding and understanding how to navigate this complex yet exciting terrain. To guide us through this journey, we have two distinguished guests whose expertise in the world of biotech investment is both profound and inspiring. First, allow me to introduce Dr. Vuyisile Pehane, the executive for bioeconomy at the Technology Innovation Agency here in South Africa, also called TIA. Dr. Pehane is an accomplished expert in technology development and commercialization with a rich background in life sciences. His journey has seen him in the forefront of evaluating funding and strategizing exits for numerous projects. His work at the TIA, a key national entity, involves bridging the gap between research, development, and commercialization, making him an invaluable asset in understanding the dynamics of investment funding. Next, we have the pleasure of welcoming Mr. Gianmarco Melfi, who is the investment principal at One BioVenture Studio. Mr. Melfi's journey in the world of biotechnology is marked by his commitment to leveraging the power of biology and technology to address global challenges. His expertise is rooted in biochemistry and biomedical sciences, and his career spans from early stage biotech startups in the UK, in the United Kingdom, to his current role at One Bio here in South Africa, where he plays a critical role in investing and supporting early stage biotech startups in Africa. Together, Dr. Pehane and Mr. Melfi represent the dynamism and potential of the African biotech landscape. Their insights today will not only provide practical guidance, but also empower each one of you with the knowledge and strategies needed to successfully navigate the investment landscape. So without further ado, let's dive into our conversation and uncover the answers to this pivotal question for episode one in our series, which is, where is the money and how do I get it? Please join me in warmly welcoming Dr. Vuyisile Pehane and Mr. Gianmarco Melfi. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Awesome. So let's get started. My first question will probably go to, I guess, both of you. What are the diverse funding sources for early stage biotech startups in Africa? Dr. Pehane, do you want to take it first?
Yes, certainly. So I think we should initially acknowledge, as startups in the biotech space, that biotech is long gestational and it is an expensive business. And so when entrepreneurs go out there and they look for funding, they should understand that it is a long-term goal. And similarly to the funders that you speak to, it's very important that colleagues engage with funders that understand that this is a long-term game. And so, the trick we say is always use other people's money first, and try not to borrow money from banks. Leave that, in essence, as a last resort, simply because one will be paying interest on that capital. And so it's very important that entrepreneurs, first of all, look around in terms of the government. Where are these government, what you call sometimes sovereign funds? Where are these funds? They might be sitting typically in the likes of the finance departments, or in the case of South Africa, Department of Science and Innovation. And so these government funds, sitting within different departments, are accessible. They do require that the entrepreneurs fill out forms. Very important, particularly in South Africa, we are managed through the Public Finance Management Act. In other words, very important that government does and plays its due diligence very well when deciding to make investments into entrepreneurs and startups. It also means then that the biotech startup should have an idea of who the venture capital companies are, venture capitalists, who the angel investors are, because these people also have access to large amounts of funding, and of course, traditional banks. These are, in essence, these sources of funding for startups. What we do recommend is that, the entrepreneurs go out and they look for different sources of funding. They certainly establish who can invest as startups, but very important that they understand and are aligned to these funders. And so one should understand that we can have debt. In other words, there's going to be interest to be paid on those funds, but also understand that partnerships with angel investors, for example, are beneficial simply because angel investors are hands-on. They've been there before. They are successful. And so they are good to have as partners, almost as mentors. And so these sources of funding must be defined. And of course, you must know very well what you're going to use that money for, whether it is operational expenses, licenses, market testing, defining your market, or even product manufacturing. We typically say that startups must have access to certain databases where they can see who are the potential funders. One I'd like to recommend as a good source of information on who will fund early-stage biotech startups is Crunchbase, crunchbase.com. A very good source of potential sources of funding for startups in biotech on the African continent. Thanks.
Fantastic. Sorry, Adrian, if I can contribute as well.
Yes,
sure. Thank you. I think that was a great overview. I think you've covered all the bases there in one swing. Maybe from the VC side of things, I can add a little bit of kind of experiences with some of these different aspects or avenues to get funding. We mentioned, the ability to raise grant funding in the early stages is critical. Being able to work and do key kind of POC experiments with grant funding, and for those grant non-dilutive funding in general, is very valuable. And we're very fortunate in South Africa to have the likes of TIA and others, as we've already mentioned, who might be in a position to provide that kind of capital. Then from the VC side of things, in biotech specifically, so One Bioventure Studio, where we only invest in biotech, so it's our bread and butter, so to speak. So we're one potential avenue for funding, and there are other VCs in South Africa who may look to invest in something biotech. One thing to kind of bear in mind for anyone listening in who's in that kind of funding role, and I think Louise mentioned this again earlier, is really get to know who it is you're approaching. Better still, find out what they've invested in previously and see if your venture is a potential fit. But I think those two kind of broad bases, non-dilutive and then dilutive funding on the VC side are there. In terms of where to find information, we completely agree. Crunchbase is a great resource. For those who like to find their information face-to-face wherever possible, networking and events, there are a number of kind of biotech-focused events. Of course, Adrian, I'm thinking of your podcast as well, and lots of information available on it from founders and those who've walked the walk before. So I'd say don't feel shy to reach out to some of those names and some of those places and groups. One Bio, we run a biotech and beers. Simply put, it's a get-together where people can have a drink and talk about biotech. So you're welcome to attend one of those, speak to founders. And then I think another avenue that I think a lot of companies do consider, but one just to remember is, reach out to kind of fellow startups who are maybe just that little bit further down the line than you are. If they've been successful in raising some funding to get their venture off the ground, they might have some great tips and ideas of where you might go and look as well. So don't be shy to reach out and ask questions, and hopefully you'll find the sources you're looking for.
That is really great advice there about all the various resources that are available for early stage biotech startup founders who are seeking funding. And, you know, you've mentioned a whole lot of things, resources online, as well as in-person networking, you know, to get the information. I'd like us to maybe get a bit more practical on, you know, where both of you sit. And I'll first want to direct my question again to Dr. Fehane. Could you elaborate on the government funding options? And I'm sure this is particularly relevant for those in South Africa, but might be useful for anyone else who is considering, you know, getting funding from the South African government, so to speak. What are the funding options that the government makes available, and what is the role of TIA in supporting biotech startups?
Thanks very much. So, you know, biotech has traditionally been considered as a specialist space, and it's been so for quite some time now. So government has been very deliberate just in terms of putting together source of funding to address biotech. And this is, of course, with the recognition of the potential for biotech, not only to create jobs, but also to return funds to government through taxes, of course, provided that, you know, these products can be sold, these services can be given, both locally and internationally. And so in South Africa, I think the most significant funder of biotech is the Technology Innovation Agency, the organization that I work for, which is an agency of the Department of Science and Innovation. We're about 13 years old now, and later on, you know, now I'll get to speak about some of our instruments, funding instruments. And so really, we are in the space of funding biotech startups, in essence, looking at health, agriculture, industrial biotechnology, but also some work in the indigenous knowledge systems space. We have platforms and clusters, which in essence encompass biotech startups. And the role is to provide an end-to-end support towards biotech startups in our country. We have partners such as OneBio. And so Marco is here to talk about OneBio and what OneBio does. We've certainly partnered up with a number of entities. One is the SASME Fund, which has recognized, you know, the value in seeding opportunities, particularly in the biotech space. Setting up platforms such as the one that OneBio will talk about now, but also a number of entrepreneurial support instruments such as incubators and accelerators. We have partnerships with the Department of Small Business Development. That particular department was created by government to specifically focus on small businesses, small and medium enterprises. And so in that, we do have opportunities to invest in biotech startups. The DTIC and the various CEDA programs and various programs within the DTIC were set up to fund those areas and those opportunities within a biotech space that required specific interventions. And some of these programs might relate to opportunities for regulatory support or the acquisition of equipment, specialist equipment that's required by biotech startups. The IDC is also a big funder of biotech in this particular space. As TIA, we certainly have partnerships with the likes of the IDC, where in some cases we have taken opportunities, de-risked them as TIA, and in essence made them available to the IDC to come in with follow-on funding. So our role is in essence to de-risk these opportunities and make them attractive to follow-on funders with much, much larger, I suppose, investment criteria. We also say, as TIA, you know, in certain cases, it has made sense for us to partner up with the likes of the IDC. Some funds we have jointly contributed to in terms of funding, just so that we can demonstrate that indeed these partnerships are really around TIA and the likes of the IDC, both contributing funding towards a number of these funds. And so generally, you know, we do see a lot of opportunity within government, where government has been very deliberate around supporting biotech startups. As I've mentioned, it's really around health, agriculture, and industrial biotechnology. Having recognized the potential for these industries and sectors to create jobs in our country. Thank you.
And just to, for those who may not know, the IDC, that is Industrial Development Corporation, right?
That's great.
Thanks so much for that insight around how the South African government and in the capacity of TIA, how you step in the process of securing funding and investment for biotech. It definitely highlights the importance that biotech holds within the strategy for South Africa. So that is very inspiring and encouraging to see. I just want to keep my eye on the chat and make sure that we do not have any questions. Just recognizing Sandra Matini, who's from Nuo Bioscience, joining us. Also, thank you, Teboko Machitisho, who is joining us from Maisha Makgaleng Biotech. Thank you all for joining us. We have over 30 people right now online, and that's quite inspiring. Thank you all for making time to join us. Do not forget to use the chat to engage with our guests. And this is your platform. We'll be having these conversations once a month, so keep an eye on the Dialogue with Africa Biotech Leaders platform on LinkedIn for updates. So, moving on with our conversation, while waiting on questions from the audience, the live audience, I have another question, which is directed to you, Mr. Melfi. Can you walk us through the typical investment process when working with OneBio? What are the stages from, say, someone contacting you initially to eventually getting funded by OneBio?
Sure thing. So essentially, maybe a bit of context before I get into the process itself. So at sure. OneBio, we invest from, you know, an idea stage. A founder or a pair of founders with an idea looking to kind of get it moving. So when we initially make contact, or most often one of the first things we'll generally ask for is an info deck. Not necessarily to be confused with a pitch deck, your short and sharp and to the point pitch you might give to a funder at a later stage, but rather a deck with a little bit more meat in it, can be non-confidential, just to give the kind of flavor of what it is you're doing, how it is you're going about to build the biotech that you're looking to build. We'll give that a look and hopefully at that stage move on to ask for a call and to get to know the founders a bit more, find out what they're doing, ask some questions. And that's really the kind of kickoff of our DD process. If, unfortunately, it's not an opportunity we can pursue, that could be from our thesis. We've got very specific views on what biotech approaches and areas and technologies we're most excited in. If we're unable to kind of take that discussion further, we'd like to try and say so as soon as possible. The last thing we want to do is absorb too much of a founder's time if we're not going to be able to be involved. And then kind of progress from there. We'll probably try and have face-to-face conversations. Ideally, it's always, although we've all learned to adapt to online calls, always best to try and meet in person. We're based out here in Cape Town, but we travel around South Africa as needed. And then our process, should we find the conviction in the team and in what they're building, we'll prepare a couple of elements of documentation for our process. So we have an investment committee, made up of a number of members, independent members of our investment committee, which we take deals to for their approval. We need their approval to invest. It's a two-stage process. The first, the team, the company, generally the founders will join a call with the IC. They will present their pitch deck. Ahead of that happening, we will have prepared documentation giving as much context and clarity around the business, around the technology as possible. And then the team have that face-to-face with the IC. And then generally speaking, a couple of months thereafter, a month or two, we'll sit a second IC. We'll answer any additional questions our IC might have, any particular areas they'd like us to focus on. Of course, consulting with the startup the entire time during this process. And then we'd go to a second IC seeking final approval. So it is a journey. Thankfully, it doesn't take too long. Can manage in a few months. But I hope that gives a good kind of step-by-step as to what's involved.
It definitely does. So I just noted DD process there is due diligence, just
yes.
For those who are not very familiar with the term. Can you share what makes one of these info decks grab your attention? What is some of the keys for success in this initial stage? And what are some of the common pitfalls to avoid already at this initial stage?
It's a good question. I think clarity, but again, I know that's often the focus of anyone writing this kind of document. You want to get your message across as clearly as you can. I think being very clear on what the problem is your company is trying to solve and really spending time to get to know, is the problem you believe you're solving truly the one that you are solving? So I think really having a good grasp on the problem and then articulating how and why your solution is going to meet the needs of that problem. I think if those two elements you can communicate efficiently and effectively, I think you're in good standing. The other thing, being biotech, and I also was on a bench for a number of years and loved the wet lab, the one thing you'd love to add is as much data as you possibly have. And yes, in a scientific publication, in an article, of course, you know, think of a something that's been published first author in Nature or Cell.
Okay.
That amount of data is sometimes a bit much for an info deck or an initial pitch deck for sure. What would tend to happen, and I think this is fairly commonplace for most VCs, is founders don't need to feel anxious about trying to get all the information to you right on day one. At some point, what you'll probably be asked for is access to a data room, essentially a nice collection of documents where if you have fantastic data, please, that's the kind of opportunity to share it with your investor to have a look at and kind of give you feedback on and get to know. So don't feel pressured to do too much in your info deck. Try and keep the problem solution really nice and crisp. And tell a story as to what your biotech, if successful, is hopefully going to achieve. I think those elements should put you in good stead.
Yeah. And I think you also mentioned earlier that you as an investor have a thesis. So it might be worth doing some research around what the investors typically invest in, just so that there's alignment from the word go. So on that note, maybe check out OneBio's website. It's .Africa. And you have, there's a lot of information there as well to help guide in this process. And turning back to you, Dr. Behane, do you mind sharing with us what are...
Certainly. So as I said earlier on, you know, our role as TIA is to de-risk innovations, de-risk ideas when they come to us. So I'll just describe four major instruments within the organization. And you will see from what I describe, in essence, covers the various, let's call them stages of technology development. So the first one is the seed fund. It is a modest amount of funding, up to R1 million. And this is targeted at researchers who are residing at universities, science council, and even some SMMEs. Ultimately, we're looking to make investment into ideas and research outputs to develop prototypes. We're looking for prototypes that come out of this particular seed fund. We do require that the concept has been proven. In other words, that which you are claiming as an innovation actually works. You've demonstrated it. And of course, must have the potential to get into the market. Regarding the seed fund, as I said, you know, it's about researchers, but ultimately saying that, you know, that opportunity is beyond basic research. We are looking for opportunities that are fundable. In other words, sometimes you might come to us and say, would like to get some funding to source an intellectual property opinion. It might be that you want to do some work around defining the market, developing a prototype. It might be that you have a design and you need a bit of money just to refine this design and implement design to, in essence, test the market. Some people come to us and say, you know, we would like to go out and do some field tests of our invention. Please support us with some funding. Sometimes, you know, the funding required by investors, innovators from TIA, is in essence send them up to get a follow-on funding from somewhere else. And so typically, you know, people will come to us and say, can we have some money to conduct a techno-economic evaluation study? If we get this right, this will in essence open up the doors as far as a larger funding is concerned, such as the IDC. Some people have market samples that they simply want to test out there. There's a cost to testing out your samples in the market. And so people come to us for funding for things like that. And of course, the big one, which is around business plan development. The next fund is what we call the Technology Development Fund, which is the larger fund within the Technology Innovation Agency. This is really where we say you have a prototype already and you now want to proceed, advance to the technology demonstration. The technology must be demonstrated. And so what we're saying is that when we make investments through the TDF, Technology Development Fund, we're wanting to de-risk these opportunities, make them more attractive to follow-on funders. In certain cases, we do see opportunities for co-funding. So those opportunities come to us and say, we have secured funding or we will secure funding. If TIA can essentially de-risk this opportunity for us, we'll certainly look into that one. That particular fund is up to a maximum of 50 million rand. And the reason for that is because greater than 50 million rand, we certainly need to go and get ministerial approval for that. It does not say that we're afraid to get ministerial approval. It just says that we want to be as much as possible, deploy our funding without having to get a ministerial approval for larger sources of funding. In the case of the Technology Development Fund, we are saying anybody can come to us. SMEs can come to us. Higher education institutions, science councils, startup companies, such as the people in the audience. We're saying again, the concept must be proven. And of course, you know, we look at whatever it might be in the biotech space. It might be health, which might be diagnostics. It might be looking at pharmaceuticals. It might be in the space of bio drugs, biomanufacturing. In the case of agriculture, it might be, for example, looking at new cultivars. Looking at the genetic manipulation of plants, of course, for greater productivity, but also might be in the space of industrial biotech, where we're saying to entrepreneurs, if you come to us with a concept that's been proven for a particular process to produce a high-value product, this might be, you know, using, of course, microorganisms to produce this product, or it might be where you've come up with a process to extract something of high value from waste. We certainly want to hear about it as the Technology Innovation Agency. The next instrument is what we call the Pre-Commercialization Support Fund. In other words, it is a fund where we are saying before you go into the large scale, scaled up commercialization, there might be certain tests that you want done. There might be certain, I suppose, activities you want to conduct. This is typically activities to make your opportunity attractive, follow-on funding. Typically, we speak about market testing and validation of the market. And of course, in this particular fund, we want to play the larger role as TIA of connecting these innovators with business and investment opportunities. So typically, you know, the likes of a large pharmaceutical company would be interested in a new drug, for argument's sake. And what we're saying is we would then come in the case of this commercialized support fund, is to assist with, for example, the very expensive clinical trials that your drug companies will want to see done, that you've gone through clinical trials. In the case of agriculture, you've in essence done your field tests that go over 3 or 4 years before anybody can say, we like that particular invention. We'd like to partner up, want to take equity, want to buy you up, lock, stock, and barrel. That's certainly possible as well. We do have what's called the Industry Matching Fund as well. Ultimately, to the Industry Matching Fund, we're leveraging funding from other funders. It is, in essence, a shared risk fund, ultimately to attract the participation of industry. Why we want to be able to support the access of innovators and inventions into the market, and this might require a bit of incubation by ourselves as TIA. And so the use of these funds must, in essence, de-risk the opportunities, make the opportunities attractive to follow-on funders, being able to do those things that will allow industry to look at the opportunity and show an interest in that opportunity. Typically, we find that, inventors, go out there, they think they have something great without actually having interacted sufficiently with the market or potential buyers or takers of this technology, of these products. And so our role is really as tier to de-risk, to make these opportunities attractive, do those things and support those activities that are going to make these innovations attractive to follow-on funders. And so over the years, we've in essence developed strong relationships with our departments of science and innovation, and particularly our treasury, and we are what we call implementing partners of the Innovation Fund. In essence, the Innovation Fund is that instrument, which is quite substantial, from the Department of Science and Innovation and various other partners as well, where we are saying, how can we support innovations to, in essence, break out into the market? This typically means the scale-up funding. We want to see jobs being created. We want to see off-take agreements, companies started up, patents registered. In essence, the full Monty as far as commercialization is concerned. That's very, very important, colleagues, as we look to the country, to see what the country needs. Ultimately, we're saying a lot of work has been done in South Africa. We have very strong scientists. We have very strong SMEs, a lot of innovations out there. The challenge is really to get these inventions into the market. That's really the purpose of the Innovation Fund. And so we're certainly happy to engage with anybody who would like to us to have a look at the opportunity and make recommendations as to which instruments will be attractive for the technology, particularly for the stage at which the technology and invention is.
That definitely paints the picture. And I think after this webinar, no one can say there isn't funding for biotech. Absolutely. So thank you so much for giving clarity on that. And maybe just to zoom in, because we've been talking a lot about early stage startups, and I know you have already within your answer alluded to this, but maybe just to bring it into focus, what would you say for those startups that are ready to scale? What types of funding should they be looking at, and how does the choice of funding source impact their growth strategy? Both of you are free to chip in here.
Would you like to go first, Marco?
Sure. I think in terms of getting to kind of scale up again, knowing the sector you're in, Vuyis mentioned a number of different areas or biotech areas, whether that be agri, biomedical, the diagnostic therapeutics differences between there. But I think you generally will become a bit more selective of where your funding would come from, and also the quantum of that funding when you're getting to that point of scale is going to change. From a OneBio point of view, we work in kind of the pre-seed and seed stages. And again, I think we alluded to this earlier, the knowledge that biotech, especially technologies that are revolutionary, that are, I hate to use the term, but disruptive, that are going to change the norm, take a long time to get to that point of scale. So we kind of appreciate that. We need to do a lot of work in those early stages to then hopefully the answer we're about to provide to those looking to scale, those companies are there in sufficient quantity to then be answering that question. But your thoughts on the kind of later stage scale up funding? What would be your thoughts?
Absolutely. So I think the big one for us is really around colleagues in the venture capital space. We're seeing, historically, venture capital has come in at the later stages with these opportunities have reduced significantly, but we see them coming in earlier. And these are sort of trends that we see within the venture capital space. But that is because they've recognized the opportunity for coming in earlier and being able to, attract additional funding from other venture capital companies from around the world. And so the sooner, startups have partners such as VCs on board, part of the cap table, capitalization table, that have equity in these opportunities, the easier it is for them to attract funding from larger venture capital companies from around the world.
Okay.
We do say that, it's incumbent upon entrepreneurs to go out and find as many sources as possible for the opportunities. And certainly they should not shy away from these high net worth individuals. And for these individuals, of course, one should be thinking about equity. They also want to see their funds grow and they also want to see a handsome return on investment. I think the bigger one where I sit is really around government funding. So government, particularly South African government, is quite serious just in terms of scale-up and supporting scale-up opportunities. We see a lot of this in the space of the IDC, who have very strong track record just around the identification of these opportunities that require millions of rands, sometimes running to hundreds of millions of rands, that invested in opportunities that can be scaled up and that have an international market. And so there are very specific requirements for these large types of investment. And one of them would be that a very good feasibility study has been done. In other words, it is feasible for government to put in what is in essence taxpayers' monies into these opportunities. And so we say, you know, colleagues should not shy away from approaching government. Those opportunities demonstrate the creation of jobs, that taxes will be paid. And of course, most importantly, those opportunities that demonstrate import replacement. You know, governments spend a lot of money importing, whether it be active pharmaceutical ingredients from other territories around the world. And those opportunities, such as the ones we funded this year, that demonstrate that some of these imports can be replaced, those will be more favorable as far as government is concerned. And so these types of funding, in essence, though, that speak to the impetus of government, particularly the needs of venture capital, be able to attract other venture capital companies because local venture capital companies want to exit and make a bit of profit for themselves. And similarly for high net worth individuals, certainly people that we can approach for funding. I must say in the South African space, you know, it is not a matter of funding. The funding is there. One certainly needs to come up with good opportunities. So some people will tell you that the challenge in South Africa in particular is the dearth or lack of good investment opportunities. And this is really what the trick is, colleagues, just around attracting certain sorts of funding and unlocking certain sources of funding. Thank you.
Thank you so much. What really caught me my attention there is the fact that you gain from partnering with venture capitalists early on, and also if you are going to approach government, it will be a good idea to demonstrate things like creation of jobs, import replacement, and that taxes will be paid. So thank you so much for that insight. We have some questions from the audience. Genevieve Thompson, who is founder at GeneVantage, asks, is there perhaps a summary of the funding streams that are currently being discussed from TIA with their financial brackets and requirements, perhaps just a link on the TIA website?
Yes. Yeah, maybe let me take that one.
Okay.
I think what the colleague is asking for is, would in essence be our investment framework policy. This, I must say, is not a document that is publicly available, but we're certainly able to engage with interested parties just in terms of what we consider, as part of that deal-making when we make investments. I must say that some of our investments are grants, 100% grant, but the majority is a conditional grant. In other words, it's on condition that, the investee makes a return that we as TIA would certainly want to share in that particular return. That share is typically in the form of royalties. We do say that our royalties should not disadvantage the opportunity, but rather should demonstrate that we are in essence supporting these opportunities. But if we don't ask for a return, it is highly likely, as we've seen before in the past, that there is no reason for these investees to go out and actually make a success of these particular innovations. So this is really, in essence, to drive a particular behavior that when colleagues receive public funds, taxpayers' monies, they make good of that particular investment. And so let's engage colleagues. We're certainly happy to talk about what it is that we invest in, how our returns are structured, just so that it makes sense from a deal structuring perspective. We always like to say to colleagues, let's engage, let's debate, and let's come to an agreement after some negotiation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope, Genevieve, that that answers your question, and feel free, like Dr. Behane has indicated, to engage with him to further that discussion. Another question from Jean-Paul Nagiri, founder at CEO Valley Technologies. He asks, what do you consider as metrics for traction, especially if it is to do with a completely disruptive technology that takes time to gain adoption? Marco, do you want to take that?
Sure. Sure. I think maybe kind of zooming into it from a different kind of angle, you know, we've spoken a bit today about, you know, product market fit and entering the market. That is often a long ways off for a lot of biotechs, especially again in the biomedical, therapeutics, diagnostics world. So one thing that VCs will often look to do is, if they're making an investment, milestone that particular investment and ask that the company provide milestones that they will hit with the funding, which would unlock additional tranches. And generally, that's a discussion with the company and what seems most practical, really getting into the weeds of the tech you're trying to build. So I think that would be the opportunity to, if you have got VCs on your cap table, engage with them for that next round. What are the key elements you believe you need to hit to be in a position to raise again, often referred to as inflection points? It does become very case by case. You know, what is the technology you are building? What stage are you at right now? Where are you wanting to be? What stage of fundraise? Are you pre-seed? Are you seed? Are you Series A? Mm-hmm. Those tranches, those milestones, those inflection points will be slightly different. So I think tough to say without knowing your company well, but I'm happy to have a chat, ping an email to info@onebio.africa. And I'd be happy to have a discussion with you into some more of the detail.
Thank you. There's one more question for you, Dr. Behane. This is from Luvuyo Sume. He says, can you please explain what a conditional grant is? I think you mentioned that, but maybe for some more clarity.
Yes, sure. So the conditional grant is, we were saying, here is some money for you to go out and do what you need to do. When you make some money and you've in essence paid your debts, which might be, you know, salaries and so forth, we're saying as tier, that which you declare as your profit would like a share of that as a royalty. So that conditional grant is in essence speaking to a form of repayment to tier as a royalty. Those royalties are in essence industry aligned. It is very rare that you'll find TIER demanding or insisting that the royalty repayment be higher than that which is in industry. Typically, it is lower than what we see in industry. That repayment is, in essence, over a number of years, depending on what the applicant puts in the application form. We do look at, for example, projections of cash that will come into the business at the time of successful commercialization. So in essence, it is a payment of royalties at an industry aligned or less than industry, lower than industry aligned royalty rate, payable over a number of years until we see that particular investment has been repaid. In certain cases, we can negotiate this and say to the colleagues, well, if you are not transformed as a business, we do put in certain conditions, such as, you know, will you now bring in women into leadership, ownership? Can that be black-owned shared ownership, and so forth? And so we ask these questions to incentivize entrepreneurs, just in terms of their business. And if certain changes are made, as I mentioned, you know, these incentives, certain changes are made, we can certainly look at a lower royalty to incentivize them, or even remove that royalty requirement, that payment requirement altogether. It's exceptional. The performance needs to be exceptional for us to make such concessions. Thank you very much.
And I think Luvuyo's question had a second part.
Sure.
He wanted to know if conditional grant is also applicable to the Technology Development Fund.
Yes. It is certainly applicable to the Technology Development Fund. That is correct.
Okay, thank you so much. And while we wait for more questions with the rest of the time that we have, I would like some insight from both of you about how biotech entrepreneurs from Africa can effectively leverage local and global networks to attract investment. Are there specific platforms, events that you would recommend? I know Marco mentioned some of this earlier, but is there any that you can call by name, some events that you know are a good gathering of local or global investment networks that people should be on the lookout for?
Marco, would you like to go first?
Sure. The one that I've been putting together is all but very humble beginnings. It's small. It's based out here in Cape Town, called Biotech and Beers. Again, that's one opportunity to kind of tap into some local networks. Others, the Innovation Summit, which happens fairly regularly. I know you can meet quite a few local investors there. Any other kind of suggestions where you might meet and can connect?
No, certainly. So it is the BioAfrica Convention. This is a convention of, you know, inventors, funders, exhibitors, and so forth in the biotech space, the bioeconomy space. Takes place every year around July, August. And so the intention there is to bring together all activities and all players in the biotech space. It's really an opportunity for us to talk about what we do as scientists, as inventors, but also to talk about, you know, policy changes, policy requirements. It might be certain global events that have taken place that do affect the biotech space, particularly on the African continent. And so it's really an opportunity for us to come together and talk about these kinds of things, but also, you know, to think about what's next as far as the African, agenda is concerned around biotech. And so when we speak about the Africa CDC, and various other, key players on the continent, it's really around those contributions to what we do on the African continent that we speak about at the likes of the BioAfrica Convention. Mm-hmm. Can you hear me, colleagues?
Yes.
Yes. Yep. And so one of the other things that we encourage biotech startups to do is to get engaged with various tech transfer offices sitting at mm-hmm. our universities. These are really good sources, and our science council, of course, these are really good sources of intellectual property. We're in essence looking for those pieces of IP that will benefit your own invention, make it stronger, and make it more competitive. Ultimately, you're looking to leverage local knowledge for the purposes of one's innovation. And so some of these requirements are to partner up with local universities for tech development. It's really important to have these universities as a partner. This assists the startup as far as its reputation is concerned, but also to assure potential users and commercializers of the performance of this particular technologies. We've mentioned conferences and conventions. Very important that startups take the opportunity to exhibit at conferences and conventions. You know, how else will people know about your invention if you're not showing it off, as it were? But of course, it means that, you know, when people take opportunity to speak at conferences and conventions, you've certainly protected your IP. So we always, you know, speak about patenting before you publish or talk about your particular invention, but also to make sure that certain things you keep as trade secret. That is certainly becoming more and more attractive as we're seeing in the biotech space, because as you know, it is easy to think that you've got a protected invention through a patent. If you don't utilize it, you certainly don't see any returns from it. But of course, after that 20-year period of exclusivity, that information essence becomes public knowledge. And that's when, of course, competitors can come into the space, you know, with regarding generics and so forth. So we do, you know, encourage trade secrets. We certainly, as TIA, fund innovations where people prefer not to talk about the innovation, but keep it as a trade secret. In essence, as a way for them to I suppose, get benefit from that competitive advantage. Thanks.
I really like the part where you mentioned partnering with universities as well, you know, to boost reputation and as well just the access to the tech transfer offices and officers who are also very, very useful stakeholders in this biotech ecosystem. So if you are lucky enough to be around the university and you have access to tech transfer offices, do reach out, and this could also be a really useful source of information and networks to assist you in finding sources of funding for your innovation. So that's really, really helpful information. Thank you.
If I may add,
yes,
if I may add, and just on that, I mean, universities also tech transfer offices have technologies that they are simply dying to license. And so, you know, it makes it much easier from the performance of the tech transfer offices for startups to approach the university and say, this is what I do. I'd like to license certain technologies that you might have in your tech transfer office. And so having worked in a tech transfer office myself, you know, the challenge is really getting those technologies licensed. And so there's no shortage of inventions and ideas coming from researchers. Tech transfer offices are there to, in essence, document these inventions. But of course, the challenge is to get these innovations out there. So the more startups come forward to tech transfer offices and want to license and look for these technologies, the better it is for our national system of innovation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
One element to add on that as well from the VC side of things is the fantastic fund that is the UTF, the University Technology Fund, who invest heavily in technologies that are developed inside of South African universities. So they're also a fantastic source of funding that if you're in that line, in that stream, and you're working on technology that was developed at a local university, they could also be a fantastic resource to reach out to.
Amazing, amazing information. So maybe not so much you getting to innovate, but you can leverage universities' IP and also funding for your biotech entrepreneurship journey. Really, really great insight there. I'm just looking if we have any other questions. Not yet. We have 5 minutes to wrap up this conversation, which has really, really been insightful and practical. And in the realm of being practical again, I would like to just find out from you, Marco, you are an investor. What are some of the best practices for networking within the investment community? Most of our founders, especially in the biotech sector, are typically scientists from a different world. Let's put it that way. And so they come into this space and they don't really know how to go about it. They have all these, probably they've read a book or something, do this, do an info deck, this. But in practice, how do you build meaningful relationships with investors?
That's a great question. I think the one thing to remember is, especially in terms of biotech VCs, now there aren't a lot of biotech VCs in South Africa or on the continent currently. We hope there will be more in time. But speaking from OneBio's point of view, my business partner and the co-founder of OneBio, Nick Walker, he's got a PhD in stem cell biology. I've done my master's in biomedical sciences. We've all been in those same shoes. We do love to get into the tech weeds. You know, everyone is busy, including yourself, the person who's looking to get in touch. So you want to try and be as efficient with your time as possible, but also, you know, get as much information on the particular person you're wanting to meet with or a company you're wanting to meet with. So, you know, don't discredit your own networks that you already have. You might have a friend working for a biotech who could give you a tip there or put you in touch with someone. You know, a couple of coffees with some old colleagues might lead you to the person or an intro to the person you're wanting to kind of get to. So in terms of kind of tips for networking, yeah, do your homework on who it is you're trying to get in touch with, and then just reach out as far and wide as you can. As many coffees as are needed to get to where you need to be, I reckon.
Thank you. So do book for that coffee.
With
pleasure.
Don't
be shy. Don't be shy. I think Dr. Pehane also mentioned that don't be shy. Be bold. Go out there and try and find the funding. The sources, the resources are plentiful, as we've discussed in an hour. We've spent this whole time talking about where is the money and how do I get it. I hope that this has been insightful and that you have gotten answers to your questions, and that, yeah, you tune in again in a month for our next episode. We want to do this every month, and we have the pleasure of having Marco and Dr. Behane as our resident guests. We will be bringing in some other special guests depending on the episode or the topic we'll be covering. So please do send in your questions ahead of time to help us curate a really great conversation with you that answers your questions, because the goal is to help grow the bioeconomy in Africa and help you grow your business in the biotech sector. Any last words from you, Marco, and then Dr. Behane?
I think from my side, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to join, and I'm looking forward to the rest of this series. And then just to those who are listening in, and please, yeah, don't hesitate to reach out if you'd like to find out more about what we're doing at OneBio and VC and biotech. From our point of view, don't hesitate. Have a look on the website, ping us an email, and yeah, always happy to chat.
Marco, when does beer and biotech take place? Is this a regular? Because I know it just happened the first one.
Unfortunately, our third one was about a week ago. But I to stay in touch, please join the OneBio mailing list. And everyone on the mailing list, I keep updated. And also, it's an open event, so you don't need to pre-register. Normally, you just come along and meet with some people.
Great. Thank you so much. Dr. Behane, last words?
So from my side, I must say that in the times that we were students, the opportunities for setting up biotech companies were not as many as they are now. And we certainly did not have so many funds in the country in support of biotech. And so you'll find that a lot of people like myself who had inspirations and aspired to start up their own companies just couldn't have opportunity, which is why we're not doing that at the moment. We're sitting behind desks and doing the kinds of things that we do. It's still very satisfying, but what satisfies me more is when we see young people come forward with good ideas. We see women come forward with good ideas, and we support those good ideas. That's really quite satisfying. That's something that we live for. So the opportunities are not there, colleagues. Take them up now. There are many, many more opportunities. And it is my view that going forward, we'll have more opportunities for biotech to thrive on the continent in particular. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And thank you to all those who joined us on this first inaugural session. We look forward to having you again live on LinkedIn for our next session. Please follow our LinkedIn page, Dialogue with Africa Biotech Leaders, to get more updates. And on that note, enjoy your morning, your evening, wherever you are in the world. And thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. That